like a breakdance cipher that's happening. We've got a DJ Weathers coming through, and B-Boy Merc is going to host that whole segment of what's going on. But it's just a real family friendly. It's open to everyone. We've got we right now just kicked off an Indiegogo campaign to really try and get a larger operational budget that hopefully will sustain us throughout the year. On that Indiegogo, you'll see a brand new video that our friend Cameron just put together, and our board member Brittany had put together for us. Beautiful video that gives you a clear idea of who Morpheus Youth Project is and the type of work that we do. Who we are really is, you know, an organization who's tapping into the youth demographic that I mentioned to you, providing a support for them to really kind of take ownership of the arts and educational, you know, opportunities that they're having, taking them further, being able to kind of take ownership of the space of their own, being able to take ownership of their own culture and their identity in a real way. Not only the youth here in East Portland, but also the youth that are incarcerated. We're in East Portland because many of the youth that are incarcerated that we're working with are coming from this area.
And some of those voices of the youth can be heard actually on Prison Pipeline on KBOO through McLaren Community Voice. Do you have a show coming up?
Yeah, actually, we got one in May that's coming up. I'm focusing on kind of arts as, you know, as a vehicle for youth to be able to express themselves and you know, I want folks to have a more clear understanding, especially for the youth that are incarcerated. What is it that arts really does for these young people? You know, it is a form of freedom for these young people.
Thank you so much, both of you. To find out more about Morpheus Youth Project and how you can help them save this youth space in East Portland, visit www.morpheusyouth.org. Thank you so much for listening to News from the Boo. I'm Delphine Crescenzo. Next week, Gil Cardon will be your host. Have a great evening. And you are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 6:01, and next is Kitchen Table Conversations, followed at 7 by Keeping It Real. Stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hey, this is Lavar Howard over here at OSP, and I'm a part of the Yahuru Salsa Cultural Club, and I just want to remind everybody, check us out, April 10th, Prison Pipeline.
Hey, this is Harold. We held our annual talent show here at OSP. What you're going to hear is you're going to hear an eclectic sound of music. You're going to hear some acoustic. You're going to hear some rap. You're going to hear some fun times. You're going to hear some people do some things close to their heart. And you're going to hear some things to ride to and have a good time to. So it's going to be on Prison Pipeline, April 10th, 6:30 p.m.
Prototype, call it the volume one, call it the overnight, call it what you want to call it. I can't call it wrong or right, man. It's hung tight, it's a prototype testing one.
You know, a lot of stuff's been heavy on my mind and heavy on my chest lately, so.
Look at the world around us, man, it's crashing and it's burning. Got me praying to the Lord for better days and deep discernment. I'm not nosy, I'm observant. I acknowledge I ain't perfect. Trying to turn the other cheek and trying to be the bigger person. But it's easier to say it, it's all reflecting in my head. No more dwelling on the past and being worried about what's next. It's like I'm on my last breath and with a noose around my neck. And it's A&A to reach its age, it really is a blessing. Oppression and depression got me stressing with this lesson. Is God trying to tell me something? If he is, then what's the message? I'm trying to get this money for my brother who's a college kid. Crying to myself like thank the Lord.
Lord God, he really did it. Leading by example wasn't hard, and plus I dated women. Taught them all I know, and 2 years later, I'm a auntie figure. Now what's the difference if I'm sinning in this contradiction? Trying to right my wrongs, but I go left and miss the whole picture. Hazy vision, cause I'm blazing, hanging in the trenches, praying that I make it.
Hello, 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 once again. This is Mary Postwaite with Kitchen Table Conversations. Delphine is engineering. In-house today, we have Nick, who you'll be hearing after my show on his show, Keeping It Real. And we have Kevin, who is a co-worker of my daughter's, and his lovely fiancée,
Kayla.
It was nice to meet you. So Kevin is here because everybody knows how much I love poetry. I have a place for it in my heart. And my daughter came to me one day and she told me that she had heard some of your poetry and she really, really enjoyed it. And she told me that I needed to listen or to read some or listen to it. So that's how the whole thing between me and you got hooked up. So I have to admit that when I heard your poetry yesterday, I was kind of blown away. It's amazing. You do very good poetry. I really like it. Excuse me, everybody out there. I just got done eating, so my throat is a little raw right now. So we're going to start off by allowing you to read one of your poems. Okay. Why don't you go ahead and tell the audience the name of the poem?
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on today. Today I'll be reading, first of all, the one that I wrote a few years ago. It's called A Broken City.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and start off with that. So.
Okay, here it goes. It's called Broken City. Puddles of vomit and gum-spotted stairs. Street lights like comets dotted in pairs. The darkness filled the mist and the sewer drains hissed. Buildings rose up so very tall alongside the people with nothing at all. The homeless piling up like forgotten tools were only as dirty as our elected fools. Apartment windows float, jaded in the night, above faded figures drifting out of sight. For the stories of the dead, which were that of abortion, I can say they were more fun than those of a whore's son. Though for those who pierced their limb with a spike, they lived safer than the dealers they pretended to like. See, the drug men who stood for a nation in hell were frequently living a lie told well. A bullet in a gun is a tragedy so tasteless that undone can become a coward who is unsung. So when daylight comes up, so too will the corrupt, and the riots will continue to swiftly erupt.
I really liked that. It's deep.
Thank you.
So tell the audience where that came from. What made you decide that, you know, you were just sitting there one day, and did you see something that maybe sparked that in your brain?
Yeah, a lot of it was just kind of when I was a lot younger, we would just skate around the city on our longboards and just take views of the city, and that kind of just the grittiness of it all just kind of created a spontaneous inspiration inside of me just to kind of create something that that could be heard in the way that I felt it.
Mm, I understand. You know, people take things how they want. I get from that, like you said, the grittiness, you know, of the city and the, for me, a change that needs to be made.
Yes.
You know, you're talking about the city as a real, what you saw, really what you saw. And that's why I like that poem, because it just seems so real to me.
It's also what I've experienced somewhat in my life. I've had a lot of friends, you know, because honestly, this is where it comes from. You know, in high school, I wasn't really liked a whole lot, just because I was a little bit different. And so, you know, when the only kids that really want to talk to you in school are the ones that are hanging out on the corner, skipping class, smoking cigarettes, the ones that'll only that will accept you for who you are and won't judge you and ask you all kinds of questions, you tend to just kind of get in with them, and you after a while feel like that's a better world. And after a while, you know, it is that way. It is a better world for years, until eventually you realize that a lot of those people, it didn't last very long for them, and they kind of fell into deeper darker places. But that's the way it goes.
I think we'll be hearing another poem about later on. Yesterday I heard a poem that you had written.
Yes.
About a young gentleman.
Yeah, I'm still feeling very skeptical of reading that because
I really wanted him to read this poem, you guys. If he doesn't want to, then it's okay.
I feel like him.
But the reason why I say that to the listeners is because everybody who listens to my show knows that I'm very passionate about the youth, and yes. I believe that, you know, no matter who you are, there's somebody out there who gives us a care. They care about you no matter what.
Yes.
And even if it's somebody that you don't know, you know, like myself, I tell everybody out there, I care about everybody. I give everybody the chance to, you know, be within my circle or my bubble until they prove me wrong, you know.
Definitely.
Coming from a person who has had a second chance, or not, I can't say second chance, but I turned my life around and I became a different person. So, you know, I've learned that I can't think that somebody else can't do the same thing. You know, and a lot of times as I grew up, poetry was the way I got my feelings out. I've read a couple poems on the air, and I was pretty vulnerable when I read them, but they mean a lot to me, and I know that your poetry means a lot to you also.
Yeah, and in high school, I felt like I was going a bit crazy just from the constant kids picking on me all the time and stuff, and I don't know if you've ever seen that movie SLC Punk, but there's that scene where they're sitting downstairs playing Dungeons and Dragons, and he puts on this song for the other kid, and he's like, "What is this?" And he said, "It's something new." And for me, that was the time in middle school when I was first introduced to Nirvana, which is my favorite band in the whole world.
I see you have their shirt on.
Yes.
I happen to like Nirvana too. You probably don't even know who they are, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit. That's not what people always, the little kids at Scooby listen to with their t-shirts. And.
Oh, yeah.
In a way that was able to, it made it possible for me to kind of get around the constant abuse and just be at peace with myself. And also it heavily inspired a lot of the rhythm of what I wrote, and I wrote, like she said, to comfort myself and to escape from a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I found when I read my poetry out loud, I was nervous to read a couple of them because, you know, very vulnerable, and I had a lot of feeling in them, but
yes.
I did it, and I faced the fear, and I did it, and I got good feedback on it, you know. But I appreciate you reading your
Thank
poetry.
You.
And being vulnerable, and I know you're nervous, and it's okay.
Oh, I'm so nervous.
It's okay. It's everybody's nervous. Because we're timed, I want to move on to the next subject.
Sure.
you know, okay, everybody knows that. Well, I don't know if everybody knows, but April is Driver Distraction Awareness Month. And you're supposed to, you know, pay attention to texting and driving, playing on the radio when you're driving and not paying attention to the road. They had this little commercial that came on and showed some stuff that kind of made me feel bad for people who were texting and driving. So I just wanted to put it out there, you know, for all of you out there who drive. You know, recently some kids have been hit and hurt. A couple people have lost their legs or partial leg due to people texting and driving and not paying attention. So I just want to put it out there that, you know, let's be safer when we drive. You know, put the phone down. You know, you can get it all, what you need to have done before you drive or after you drive.
Or just pull over.
Right, or pull over, you know. So I just wanted to throw that little tidbit out there to all you everybody listening. You know, I don't drive because I have road rage. So I made the responsible decision to not drive anymore because of that.
Honestly, I have road rage too. And after a while, I tried the racing thing. That didn't work out too well. And then I eventually realized that I got more enjoyment out of just pulling over to the right lane and letting people get right up to the bumper of the other guy and watching them fight over the space.
Yeah, I just don't drive. You know, it's easier for me that way. So I just want to put that out there. So now the next thing that I seen today, I had this, you know, I have my little pet peeves list, but I seen a couple things on the news that kind of irritated me. One of them was the budget cuts. So as of today, I hear that they're thinking about cutting teachers' jobs so that they can give raises to others who work in the educational system. And I was kind of shocked by that, you know, and everybody knows my opinion. And they know how I feel about school and the school system. I don't like it. It's not a secret. Here it is, just one more point. You know, they're talking about taking away more physical education, which will, they're saying if they do that, that they're not going to meet the district standards. Mm-hmm. So here we are once again taking from our children who are the future of this world, and you guys are once again cutting them down. And, you know, what do you think about that, Nick? Because you're closer to that age than I am, I feel
even now, like when I went to Roosevelt, the classes was packed. Now that I go to POIC, the classes is smaller, and I feel like I learned more there than I learned at Roosevelt. And so having more money to have more teachers for kids really helps.
Yeah.
So I feel like cutting that would just...
Yeah, my son was telling me, you know, like Roosevelt got this big, huge amount of money to renovate their school and, you know, make it nicer. Maybe the kids would want to come to school. And my son comes and he's like, Mom, they got a table so that you can charge your phones. Well, first of all, you don't even want the kids on their phones in school.
Yeah.
Why are you putting a table out there encouraging them to charge up their tablets and their phones and their, you know, their notebooks or whatever? That doesn't... And how much did you spend to make this table with all these... this, you know, technology on it to do what you needed to do? That's ridiculous to me.
Right.
When teachers are coming out of their pockets to pay for school supplies.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous to me. And now you want to create more, you know, take more money from them. And I'm like, are you serious? Are you serious? This is a big issue for me. You know, I've dealt with my son in school for a while. And by the way, to my listeners, he's doing very good in NAIA. He's had a couple little issues, but he's doing pretty well. He likes it, and this is good. This is good news. We've struggled with school with my son, so.
So they have a table you can leave your phone there to charge?
You plug your phone. That's all the table is for.
Bro, like 6-7 months ago, I would have been like, all right, I'm going to Roosevelt to give me a bunch of new phones, bro. That's all that's going to cause is problems.
Right.
Like, they're taking my charger port. He stole my phone at the charging station. Like,
right. I mean, and who does that? Why? That makes zero sense to me. You don't want them on their electronics in the first place. That doesn't make any sense. I don't get it. And you spend all this money on this, and then you wonder why there's no, you know, textbooks, or why you have to cut PE and whatever. But look at what you're doing. I mean, really? And come on now. Yeah, I was pretty upset with that. But yeah, so I hear this, that they're thinking about firing teachers, or let me clarify myself, laying them off.
No, of course.
I have to be technical. They're laying them off so that others in the educational system can get raises. How greedy are you? Shame on you. How greedy are you that you would take somebody's living where they can't take care of their family because you want more money? You want, you know, 50 more cents an hour, or, you know, $1,000 extra a year, or whatever it may be. How greedy is that? That is one of the reasons why the system is the way it is, because of greed and corruption. And if this bill passes, I got something to say. I don't think that that's right at all. Not at all. So if anybody out there is listening and they feel the same as me, let me know. I'm down. We need to help our kids. We need to go to the school board and talk about this and let them know how we feel about it. So, you know, everybody knows if you want to call in. And Delphine, can you throw the number out there for me?
Yeah, sure, Mary. The phone number is 503-231-8187. 231-8187.
There it is. And, you know, I'd love to hear anybody's opinion on this. Now, another thing I want to talk about real quick, and I know that this is probably going to spark some heated comments, but without saying any names, first of all, before I forget, let me throw a shout out there to Tony and to Big Blue. Hey, y'all. Sorry that I didn't mention you in the beginning, but I forgot. Anyway, so I'm gonna lay a scenario out for you guys. A mom, dad, and three kids. Two sisters and a brother. One of the sisters and the brother were fighting, probably physical, sibling rivalry, happens all the time. Dad comes home and basically beats the daughter. Daughter goes to the hospital, nose is messed up, black eye, scratches on her face, the whole bit. First of all, when mom went to the authorities, they did nothing. Mom went to try to get a restraining order, they did nothing. Mom tried to have the dad removed, they did nothing. This is another reason why our world is going to crap, because we're not taking a stand for, you know, those that need us. This young girl is 16 years old and has been beaten by her father, punched in her face, knocked out cold. 16.
It's disgusting.
It's disgusting. Why is it that our criminal justice system is so far out of whack that you can't remove this man from this young girl's home, even if she's got the bruises and the things that are on her face? And now, you know, this is personal to me. I've been through domestic violence more than once, and you know, it hurts my heart to see this poor young girl. Even if the scars on her face go away, she's forever going to be traumatized by this. She's forever going to remember that her father did this to her, you know. And I don't get why it is that nobody's helping her. She's trying to get the resources to get helped. So, you know, I myself, being the community health worker, I'm going to go ahead and see what I can do, but only because I know them. Good. And, you know, that's the best I can do. But however, I was really upset. And that's how another, like I said, just another way of showing how corrupt our system is. They just don't even care. But then when something happens, you know, something really, really tragic, like let's just say she ends up dying. You know, he jumps on her and, you know, maybe she takes her last breath. Then what?
That's what people don't realize.
Right. Does it take that for them to understand?
The legal system, it doesn't understand that you can put somebody in jail for 10 years and it doesn't even come close to covering what the damage that was done to the victim.
Right.
Which is everlasting.
She's gonna remember that forever. And, you know, putting somebody in jail isn't always the answer. You know, being somebody who's been to jail way too many times that I can count, that's not necessarily the answer. For somebody like that, they need help. They need treatment. They need to know why it is that they're allowing themselves to do this to their daughter. There's got to be something in their brain that is allowing them to make that violent move towards their own child.
Exactly. You throw someone in jail and they're just cut off from society. If you take them and try to help them and turn them around, you may not even be just helping them, but you could also be helping others. If you can teach them to teach others what their own mistake was,
right,
then you're helping countless.
Right. And my honey love, if you're listening, because I told you that I would bring it up, if you're out there and you're listening, I want you to know that I love you and I have your back. I got you 100%. I told you earlier, whatever you need, and if I can provide it, I got you. So there it is there. But, you know, I said all that because I want everybody out there that's listening to pay attention. You know, this happens way more often than what people think, and it often goes untalked about and unseen. And you know, people say, well, what goes on behind closed doors or what goes on here stays here. But you know what? For those of you out there going through the abuse, it doesn't have to stay. You can find somebody who will help you get out of that situation to the best of their ability. You know, just know that you're not alone and there are people out there that can help you. You just have to find the right one, you know. And unfortunately for some, it doesn't ever come. And I can't provide any miracles for you, but I can tell you that, you know, hey, it's there and you can try. You know, you mean something and you're worth it. Don't allow, you know, yourself to be taken advantage of like that. And for those of you out there who are the abuser, you need a good one yourself. You need somebody to turn around and treat you the same way that you treat them. More than likely, you're grown or know right from wrong. And what you do comes back to you, you know, just like that. We have a caller, and Jeff, are you there?
I'm here. Are you there?
I am there. And I'm here. How are you?
I am dangerously well, thanks. Oh. I believe you can be called fairly fully woke, and I really appreciate the fact that you are fully woke.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I'll take that as a compliment.
Oh, absolutely. The issue strikes me that we always put education on the chopping block when it comes to with penny pinching, because our budgets are overblown, and our spending habits and our addictions and spending are way out of whack.
Yes, I believe that too.
And I
see, I believe in simple.
It was many years ago that I went to school. But even then.
Me too.
Even then, it was apparent that it was quite apparent that a lot was being spent on administration and bond issues for reconstruction and renovation without actually thinking that, or even beginning to understand, that education is almost a personalized thing between a teacher and his or her students, and that experience of that teacher is what will surpass anything in the way of infrastructure. Did we not build this country off of one-room schoolhouses in the prairie? Now, admittedly, on Indian land, I know we stole the land, I know, but we can do this if we trust in people rather than political institutions and favors. And that's so much of what we see as a favor to this, that, and the other, including some union activity that may be asking a little too much, but administration is the very first place we need to look for cutting.
Yeah.
And that's all I had to say, but I really, really appreciate your fervor on an important subject.
Thank you, and I appreciate your feedback, too.
They're a very good point.
Yeah, very much so. I love to hear from the listeners. And you have a wonderful day, Jeff. That's my brother's name. Hey, Jeff, what's up? Yeah, and you know, back when I was in school, we had all kinds of stuff offered to us. And nowadays, there's nothing, you know, and it's crazy.
Exactly. That's really the way it was. If you can imagine bringing education and abuse and the domestic abuse into the same view 40, 50 years ago. You know, my mother was abused before she met my father, and there was nothing that anyone would do. The cops would come to the door, and then she would just get beat harder because he was a good, upstanding citizen in that town,
and
everybody believed what he said.
Well, of course.
And then in education,
he donates his money, you know, and takes care of the community center.
And my point is that everything was so one-sided. It was a man's world. You know, the even in education, there was no understanding of any mental differences that there might be in children. There was no adaptation to dealing with these types of differences.
Well, when unspoken, you know, back when you were younger, you didn't talk about those things.
Exactly.
Know? Those are things that happened in the house.
They set you aside and you were ridiculed.
You know, you just never talked about it. But, you know, me, I want to break that, no matter what it is, school, abuse. No matter what the situation is, if there's any kind of negative that I can make more positive, that's what I like to do. And, you know, I'm a realist and I see life in a different way. I see things differently than some people see. And, you know, I like that about myself. I do, because I'm able to take your opinion and I can make up, you know, my own whatever with everybody's values and whatever the situation may be. With that being said, you guys haven't really heard about the struggles that I've went with my son, and that, you know, now he's ended up where he's at. But for a long time, I wanted to pull him out of school because I just, it just wasn't, he wasn't learning anything. He was not, nothing. He had no credits, nothing at all. There was nothing. And I'm like, you know, how can a kid have nothing? There's not a mark on his name in school. That's crazy to me. So I was going to pull him out because it just, you know, school was never for me, but, and I don't think it's for him, but he went to an alternative school and that didn't work. So we sent him where he's at. But if he wasn't where he's at now, he would be at home learning from me, real life. And, you know, we would learn in the streets like I did. So.
I think Kayla here has something to add to that.
You want to add to that?
Well, you know, I didn't last very long in the education system for a similar reason. I would go, but I felt like I never learned anything and I never had any credit for the effort that I put in, so it felt like a waste of time. So I didn't make it past middle of sophomore year, which I feel at least in my hometown, because I'm from Sandy, that's about as far as people go before they give up. And just the idea that, I don't know if the budget cuts were just to Portland schools or across the board in Oregon, but I feel like the administration gets enough money.
The teachers
need to get the money.
Yes.
The teachers are the one on the ground floor teaching the children.
With 30, 35 kids in their classroom.
And I don't understand how they expect the education system to be successful without the funding of the people who are teaching.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you saying that. I feel the same way. You know, our teachers are very, very underpaid. They have very long hours, and they get stressed, and, you know, their work source is strained. Then you have people, you know, like Nick, who, you know, I'm just playing. He is awesome. I love Nick.
You are awesome, Nick.
You are awesome. You're not listening. Get off the radio or off the phone. See, texting and driving. That's what I'm talking
about.
Who
texts and drives?
Yeah,
not me.
Put your phone down real quick.
Not me.
Anyway, so yeah, schools and today it's crazy. You know what else is crazy today? Church. Yeah. You know, I'm probably going to get some heat for this, but I really don't care. My daughter was faithful in the church. My son was faithful in the church. My son had an issue on the bus one day. School bus, mind you. Now, the pastor's wife of the church that they went to was also a nurse. Mm. And supposedly, my son did something that he wasn't supposed to do. And the little boy, who was the quote-unquote victim, went to the hospital. And it just so happened that this woman was his nurse. So she gets his whole story about what happened and whatever. And instead of coming and, you know, maybe talking to me as the parent or sitting my son down and saying, hey, what happened? She automatically just assumed that what this little boy said was true and that my son was just this bad person and she reprimanded him and whatever, whatnot. Come to find out, the little boy, it wasn't the way the little boy said it. There was a videotape, so it was seen by a third party. And I'm like, you know, that's why I stopped my son from going to church, because in my opinion, mm-hmm. church is a hypocrisy. I just feel that way. You know, everybody knows that I joke about the church and me. I go in, I feel like I'm going to burn up. And that's just because I am who I am. You know, my feet start to hurt and I feel like everybody's staring at me and I start to get hot and I'm like, it's time for me to leave. I'm just not a church going type person. I don't feel like that's my place. You know, my daughter, on the other hand, she enjoyed going to church, and I never stopped her. That's one place I never stopped my children. Whatever religion you want to have, that's fine. I'm going to love you no matter what. Me personally, I'm going to sit right here, and I'm going to wait for you to come home. And that's okay. And that's just how I feel. Okay. And so, you know, I was very disappointed with the church, amongst other things that go on in the church. But we have another caller. His name is Bill. Bill, are you there?
Oh, yeah.
How are you today?
How you doing? Pretty good.
Good.
About the school thing, well, when I went to school, you know, paper was given to you, pencils, pens, all that stuff. And in the you know, the uniforms were for the games that they have and everything mm-hmm. for the sports. That was all given to you. Well, mm-hmm. this is back in the 60s, so 50s and 60s.
I'm not quite that old, but back when I went to school, that was also provided for us. You know, we didn't have to worry about those kind of things.
I know. Now I see, you know, kids have, it's like they're learning how to beg.
Absolutely, or it's a fashion show. You know, who's got the better clothes or shoes or the better electronics. You know, that's how I look at school nowadays.
What I mean is that I see, like, the football team is out. They get buy this so that we can get our uniforms and buy this so we can get our equipment. And and it's teaching them to beg instead of teaching them how to work for it. And it's kind of sad how now they want to, like you say, cut the funding for teachers, cut the funding for the school, but
for physical education.
Yeah. And but the rich kids, they get everything.
Oh, of course.
You know. Just because your parents can afford to buy you the best clothes doesn't make you a wonderful person.
That's right. And I agree with you, Bill. I do. I appreciate your comments, and I'm happy.
And one more quick thing is,
sure.
This was years ago in the late 90s, I think I heard this, where this woman, this couple came from a different country, and the woman was able to adapt to the situation here, and she was working and all that, and the husband didn't like that. And finally she got him to be put in jail and got a restraining order and all that. So she's living good with their children, and then all of a sudden he went on to what they call a work. He had to work for being in jail, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he left there, came home, and killed her.
Oh boy!
And he couldn't do it, and you know, they didn't do anything about it beforehand, and now she ended up dead because of that. That's really, really bad.
Yeah, I appreciate you calling in and telling me that. That's sad, actually.
Yeah.
It is, and it happens every day. But I'm going to have to move on. I have another caller. I appreciate you calling in, Bill.
Okay.
And you have a wonderful day, and be safe.
Okay, you too, then. Thanks.
And thank you. So we have another caller. Joshua, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
How are you today?
Oh, all right. I really appreciate your all's conversation, and I just wanted to validate your experiences relating to schools as well as your... and I work in an East County school. I work in an organization inside the school. I don't work for the school, but I work with young people. And what I have learned is that schools can be very toxic places.
Yes,
and
yes.
That when we talk about, you know, why, and there's a lot of shame put on parents and guardians on why isn't your student performing academically? Why is your student avoiding school?
Right.
It's the most complete picture you can give. There are very real reasons. There is bullying, every type and form. In fact, nowadays with social media and online and then mobile devices, young people don't get a break. They go home and they're inundated with the most vicious comments, and it is so present.
Mm-hmm.
It is one truth I've learned, you know, and so I just want to acknowledge a lot of the stigma that parents feel, and as well as the corporatization of school that's made it so that teachers are no longer teachers, they're workers.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the autonomy to teach what they want, and along with this state testing, every students are being taught to be workers, automatons. And,
yes.
And to be, it is completely unstimulating, and it teaches to one style of learning at all. And it's
that is extremely true.
Anyway, that's what I wanted to say.
Absolutely, and you know, I appreciate you calling in and saying that. You're right. I feel the same way. You know, me personally, I think that all public schools should have uniforms. And I say that because, you know, nobody could actually pick on somebody for what they don't have or what they have better or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, everybody would be the same. You know, so...
I just want to say I agree with every single word he said.
Oh, absolutely. I appreciate you calling in. And
thank you for having this important conversation.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And, yeah, I'd like to hear more from you later if we ever have something that we're talking about you want to talk about. Yes, we can. So we're going to go to a small break, and we're going to Crystal Gale, Brown Eyes Blue.
I'll be fine when you're gone. night long. Say it is untrue, and don't it make my brown eyes blue? Tell me no secrets, tell me some lies. Give me no reasons, give me alibis. Tell me you love me, and don't let me cry. Say anything, say goodbye. I didn't mean to treat you bad. Didn't know just what I had. But honey, now I do. And don't it make my brown eyes, don't it make my brown eyes.
And we're back. That was Crystal Gayle, Brown Eyes Blue. I loved that song when I was growing up. And I picked that song today because my aunt always reminded me of Crystal Gayle. She had long brown hair like past rear. And I don't know. She popped in my head today. Excuse me, you guys. I just took a bite of my food. Okay, I'm better. I'm back. All right. So, I'm going to let you go ahead and get ready to say your next poem. We have one more poem coming from Kevin. While he gets ready, I actually remembered to write down my pet peeves this time. Yes, because I have quite a few. I won't read them all though, because there's like 25 or something, you know, because I get irritated easily. But, okay, we're gonna go ahead and listen to this poem. What's the name of it?
This one's called All You Got, and honestly, while I was writing this one, I felt torn, like I didn't really have the right to write it. And I felt, you know, let alone read it on the air. Mm-hmm. I never thought it would go this far. But he was this guy, I don't want to say his name, so I'll just say his initials, DMD. Went to Fort Vancouver High School. His life was from 1990 to 2012. And he was an amazing, amazing bass player. And he never really said a word to me. Probably because I never said a word to him, because I made the assumption early on that he was out of my league. I just thought he was the coolest guy I've ever seen. Just sitting there in the music room, just going crazy on his bass.
Mm-hmm.
And then years later, when I found out what had happened, I kind of went a little crazy inside. And so I wrote this, a little prelogue here. I wrote, the boy with the quiet right inside, who I've always and now more than ever wished I would have known. It's called All You Got. And it was written from just a little piece of newspaper that I saw in the obituary. And that's where the title came from, All You Got. Name, age, location, and date. That was all you got. A death notice in the news. That's all they showed for you. No story, no truth, nothing to tell us what we lose. Another lost youth, no clues. The name your mother gave to you, from self-blame she couldn't save you. When you came into her arms, she craved you. Now her nights are drained of tears, she would have been brave for you. This mother who gave you this name now digs a grave for you. Your age was young, but not nearly done. The time it took for you to learn fun, to learn that you're a good son, to learn that your art can stun, to learn that you've already won. Wasn't enough time for you to learn how to please not pick up that gun. This place you lived in, I'll admit, isn't pretty. Gray skies, cold rain. Yes, it is a bit gritty. Yet there are better places you could have seen, but now you'll never be places more green. So far away you were, you thought that day. You'll never see how close you were this way. Never stray from this city. For you, I pray, I pity. And lastly, a time stamp, an expiration date, the day you chose to no longer debate whether life was worth it or you were worth life. You would have had a wife, a child, all this innate. A future was on your plate, something still small but great. You thought this innocuous, so minuscule, so minor, but I bet you never imagined I'd never met a still finer. A death notice in the news, that's all they showed for you. Name, age, location, and date. That was all you got, but it wasn't all you were, and it wasn't all you were to be. If only I'd let you know me.
I wanted him to tell that poem because, you know, people who know me, they know that I'm an advocate for suicide prevention. Coming from a person at times have been suicidal in my life and have tried multiple times to commit suicide. As I am an adult now, I look back upon my life and I think about the times that, you know, I was feeling the ways that I was and how I felt. And I heard that poem yesterday and it kind of hit me because it could be that one thing, you know, it could be a high, it could be a smile, it could be that one thing.
Just anything.
Anything that could just change that person's life forever, you know, and I set out little challenges and, you know, I've set this one before and this is going to be my challenge again. And it's when you see somebody who just happens to look like a little bit down or maybe they have a tear coming out of their eyes or, you know, whatever it may be.
Or if they're just quiet.
Right. You know, take the time to, you know, say hey or hi or, you know, how you doing? Just take that time to take 1 minute out of your day just to acknowledge that person and smile, you know, or say hi. It doesn't just take much.
Never make the assumption that someone's quiet all the time because they don't want to talk to you.
Right.
Make
they may the not know what to say.
Because they think you don't want to talk to them.
Yeah. And so, you know, the young man that you were speaking about committed suicide.
Yeah.
And it makes me feel sad for him. But I'm very happy that you read that poem because it's a learning lesson. For you as well as me to
hopefully,
you know,
others
to see the boy in the music room playing the bass quiet, not talking to anybody, not having any friends walking around with him. Take that time, you know, take the 2 minutes or the 1 minute to say, hey, what's up? You know, what's your name? Oh, my name's Mary. You know, and that's all it takes sometimes. Sometimes I feel like there's nobody there to listen or, you know, nobody knows I exist. And sometimes it does just take that one person to show that you do exist.
It's the ones that aren't trying to act suicidal.
Yeah.
It's the ones that you would never expect in a million bazillion years would ever kill themselves. Those are the ones that will.
Yeah. And when you look back on it, there's signs and sometimes there's not. But, you know, you never know when the situation's going to come around. So, you know, just take the lesson and learn that, you know, everybody deserves a hello or a smile as you walk by or some kind of acknowledgement, nod your head, you know, something.
And a lot of times it's the ones that seem the most happy too.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to know. But, you know, a lot of comedians are comedians because the only joy they could get out of life was making other people laugh.
Right.
And that's why they seem so happy all the time. But they're really not.
Right. So, you know, we're about 10 minutes to the hour. And I said beforehand, on a more lighthearted note, I guess you could say, I said before we went to break that I had a pet, or maybe it was after, I had my little pet peeves written down. I always do a little pet peeves because, you know, sometimes you get those things that just really irk you, but it's not like an everyday thing. So I wrote them down. And one of my pet peeves is like people who are never wrong. Never wrong. You know, no matter what the situation is, they're never wrong.
Because that's possible.
Right. Absolutely. You know, and I'm like, how are you never wrong? You know, ever. Like, who does that? Who's never wrong?
Jesus.
So they say. You know, I mean, Never wrong, huh? So, oh, okay. And I say that because I know somebody very close to me who thinks that they're never wrong. And, you know, it's always about, anyway, never wrong. And disrespectful kids. Now, granted, I will say, disrespect starts at home. If you raise your children disrespectfully, they're going to be disrespectful. Definitely. There are always those extenuating circumstances. Not every child is the same. I have one on one scale, or one end of the scale, and one on the other end of the scale, so I get it. However, one thing that would not happen is my children would never disrespect me by calling me out of my name, or putting their hands on me, or, you know, trying to call me out in public or something, whatever it may be. They would never even think about doing that. And if they did, the second thought would come in real quick. You know, I have a friend and her kids are extremely disrespectful to her, calling her names. They think they run the house. They do what they want to do. They don't care, blah, 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 blah. You know, she gives them all the money. They don't care. She's like, can I borrow $5 so I can go cash my check? No, you can't have no money. Okay. You know, just calling her names, bad mom, blah, blah. And it's just so ugly to me. It's ugly. You know, no matter what your parents do in life, that's their mistakes. You need to learn from your mistakes. And if you know that what your parents did wasn't cool, or you don't think it was cool, then don't do it. It's just that simple. Then don't do it.
Well, they did.
You know? Well, they did do it, but do as I say and not as I do.
Exactly.
You know, if you know what I did was dumb and it was wrong, why would you turn around and do the same dumb, wrong thing? That's dumb. I mean, that's how I feel. I mean, seriously, I teach my kids by the lessons that I've learned in life. That's how I teach them. And then I teach them the real lesson. I don't sugarcoat it. I don't, you know, tiptoe around a situation. I tell them like it is, because my kids need to know what it is out there. If I pamper them and, you know, swaddle their little behinds every day, they're never going to get nothing. They're going to be spoiled, which they are. They're going to be, you know, brats, which they can be. But I still love them, and they're still respectful. Disrespectful kids start at home. Disrespect starts there. So if you got disrespectful children, maybe you should look in the mirror and find out what it is about you that's being disrespectful to them. Yeah. You may not like what I had to say, but it is what it is.
Unless of course you're a sociopath. Everyone knows the rule. Yeah. The golden rule, as cliche as it is to say. If it hurts you, why would you do it to someone else?
Yeah, that's one of them extenuating circumstances. You know, some people just don't feel the fear. As my mom would put it, put the fear of God in you. Yeah, that's what my mom used to always tell me. I'm going to put the fear of God in you. Oh, ooh, I'm scared. Me and my mom's relationship didn't go very far.
Smite me, almighty.
So, now, everybody knows that I like to smoke. And I'm smoking the other day, right? I don't know about y'all. I don't know if y'all smoke. I really don't care. But when I smoke, why is it that when I load it up, you burn the whole green hit?
You're supposed to corner it.
What is that? Like, I want some green, too. What's up? You can't share it half and half? I mean, for real? You're going to give me the ashy, nasty, burnt-up stuff? You know, that's really not cool. That is so... that's disrespectful.
Well, that's why I don't just even shareable. I just, you know, give everybody their own.
I mean, okay, Mr. Moneybags, I don't have it like that to be giving everybody their own. Bring your own. It's BYOB over here. Bring your own, bud. And that reminds me, when weed was becoming legalized, there was a young lady that was walking around in Seattle, in Vancouver, I think, not Seattle, taping or stapling 10 bags to poles randomly around town. Oh, and talking about be happy, or, you know, making a little smart comment of, you know, let me blow your mind or something like that. And honey, what's your name? Because I'd like to follow you.
Hey, she should put her phone number on there and got Trapper of the Year.
You right. I'm excited. Can everybody. I be your friend while you stapling weed to poles all over Vancouver? For real? You got it like that? Wow. I need to live with you. Seriously. I can't. Sorry, people. You ain't going to find me stapling nothing to a pole. But a piece of paper, maybe.
My people.
Lost cat. That's about it.
Mm-mm. Ink expensive. I don't know.
Right.
I might as well buy a new cat. I don't got a printer no more.
Speaking of, I went to go buy ink for my printer. Oh my God. That's expensive stuff. Yeah, I remember when I got the printer in the first place, the ink went real quick because I got it for school for my son. It went real quick. I'm like, dang.
It's going to be unlimited out here printing full HD pictures.
We're printing, right. We're printing pictures, tattoos, you know. Yeah, so much for schoolwork. We're printing the tattoo. Oh, I like this tattoo right here. You know, I'm looking for a tribal, quote unquote, spider. I don't think I'm going to find it, but that's what I'm looking for. I'm going to finish my back. But, so yeah, but ink is extremely expensive. And I almost like fell out into the store when I was like, really? Okay, well, we're not going to buy ink today. We'll get it another day. I want the CD. So, you know. Okay, and for my last little pet peeve, ungratefulness.
Oh, yeah.
Who? Ungratefulness. Me coming, I've been there where I've had lots of money and could buy whatever I wanted. And I've been so broke that I had to stay awake in a bus shelter so that my daughter, 2 years old, could sleep. You know, so I've been at both ends of the spectrum. But I'll tell you what, I am grateful for every little piece of dirt, dust, whatever in my house. I am so grateful. I have a stable house. My children have had a stable life, went to stable schools, well, you know, relatively. And I'm grateful for that because they've had the things that I didn't have. And, you know, I see so many people nowadays that are just so ungrateful for the smaller things in life. You know, it's not okay. You think that everything is all whatever and you have this and you have that, and then when it's gone, it's like, oh, it's okay, I'll just get another one. But life's not like that, man. You can't be ungrateful to people. When somebody does something for you, say thank you. I mean, if anything, say thank you. You know, don't just say, oh, well, I can get what I want, blah, blah, blah. It's not, man, ungratefulness should be a sin. That's how I feel. It just irks me to my bones. I can't handle it. Do not be. My daughter one time broke something and said, oh, I'll just get another one. Oh, yeah? You'll just get another one, huh? Oh, okay. So, needless to say, she didn't get another one because that's ungrateful. That's ungrateful. I didn't even have to get you that in the first place. So for you to say that, or I hear kids, oh, I wanted the blue one. Well, that's not the one I wanted. That's ungrateful. Your parents went to work or whoever went to work or whatever they did to get that for you, you know, and you're ungrateful. That's not okay. Or if you, you know, have something that somebody else may need and you have it and you can spare it, spare it. You never know. That person could be just in that little hole right then, and then tomorrow they're coming to your house with billions talking about, hey, you know, remember me? You helped me up out the ditch yesterday. You never know what you might, you know, run into. Be grateful for the things that you have and that the people that are around you. Did you have something to say?
Oh, you know, I really did. It's in the same vein as what we were talking about earlier, is that gratefulness starts at home.
Mm-hmm.
You as a parent need to set boundaries and make sure that, you know, when a kid breaks something, they don't get a new one right away.
Absolutely.
They understand where that money comes from. I was raised in a home where I understood where money comes from, mm-hmm. and there was nothing sugar-coated. Whereas I feel like kids nowadays don't really understand how money happens.
My daughter, she was worked since she was 13.
Yeah.
You know, there was a program that she could work in, and she did. And for 13, she's like, yeah, I want that money. But it taught her, you know, people were like, why are you, you know, 13, I don't care. You work, you pay. And that's how I feel. You know, she helped pay with whatever. She bought her own whatever she wanted to buy or whatever. And it taught her the value of a dollar. It taught her that hard work earns you something in life, you know. And now she's working again. Kevin is her coworker, so she's working again, and she really actually enjoys doing what she does. She scoops ice cream. I want to go have some because they said they have good ice cream, and I've never had their ice cream. So,
oh, it's so good. Drop by the Lloyd Center ice cream shop. It's glorious.
Is it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
What's it called?
All American Ice Cream.
And there it is there. All American Ice Cream. Okay, I'm going. Ice cream is good in the winter. That's when I like it the most. You like ice cream in the winter?
It's good.
Why is that?
Because you're not supposed to really eat in the winter. Like,
I wear flip flops in the winter.
I feel it.
Who knew?
Actually, I don't do that no more. Because one time I was walking into Nike to buy some shoes and I had my slides on, and I slipped on some ice in front of everybody in the store.
Ooh.
I didn't even want to go in there after that.
You hear that? Don't wear slides in the snow.
Bro, it wasn't snow. It was
coming from
ice.
Somebody who can wear stilettos in the snow.
Noted.
So, yeah. But, you know, after all is said and done in the end of the day, We all are who we are, and we all should learn to appreciate the things we have and those around us, whether it be big or small.
Exactly.
You know, and everybody around you has something to show you, and you always have something to show the next person. So with that being said, I want to wish you adieu, and I will talk to you next month. Much love to those who listen, and I'm out. Next up, keep it real.
Got me stressing with this lesson. Is God trying to tell me something? If he isn't, what's the message? I'm trying to get this money for my brother who's a college kid. Crying to myself like, thank the Lord God, he really did it. Leading by example wasn't hard, and plus I dated women. Taught them all I know, and 2 years later, I'm an auntie figure. Now what's the difference if I'm sinning in this contradiction? Trying to right my wrongs, but I go left and miss the whole picture. Hazy vision, cause I'm blazing, hanging in the trenches. Praying that I make it, yes, still living in the same conditions. That's far-fetching, double-minded, having double standard, double temptation. In my face, my kryptonite is damaged. They say, if you knew better, you would do better. But I know I'm still living up and do whatever. My daddy's gone and my mama, she's my backbone. Like every time I fall off, I always go back home. Headed down the road of truth or death up in my rear view. It's time to make a change, the end of days is coming up soon. Raised to be a Christian, but was bred to be a goon. Was taught from the streets, what I never learned from school. Now it's time to pay my dues with my head held high. Cause in reality, we all just living to die. So I'm 10 toes down, trying to steer from my demise. Steadily claiming that I'm cool, but you can see it in my eyes. Hey, as time flies, I think I'm learning from my every move. To make it in this life, you gotta sacrifice and lose. That's the truth. If I'm lying, you can stop me now. I'm standing tall, so you can never ever break me down. God got me, you don't. You a lying, he won't. You a fake and he can't. And that's the friend that I want. You non-believers, I don't get it. You say he's a fraud. Yet every time you get in trouble, you say, oh my God. Would you die for everybody to have a clean slate? Or get beaten until we couldn't recognize your face? Now I don't think so. It's time to wake up and look around, because the devil's trying to take us. I know I'm not perfect, but tell me who is. You couldn't judge me if you wanted, lead to judging to him. I know I'm going on the whim to get the ignorance to listen. God gave me your word, now it's time to do my mission. I don't get it. Is my pigment such a bad thing? Are we in our last days or a bad dream?